We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
The following is a special KMOX sports presentation. Welcome to Chili's Week in Hockey.
Blues get it ahead. Perron onside to Sundqvist. He scores! Oscar Sundqvist, his second of the game.
That's playoffs. You know, you have to have guys step up at big times, and you've got guys that are putting the puck in the net that don't always put it in, you know, but that's playoffs.
Jets hold it in, get a man down low, and Laine scores. I don't know how Patrick Laine can get that wide open. In four-on-four hockey, but he did. Wheeler cuts it in to the middle. They shoot. Pad save, Binnington, and they've scored. Kyle Connor kicks it in on the rush up the ice, and the Winnipeg Jets have tied the series 2-2.
Playoffs is all about response. Doesn't matter if you win or if you lose. It's about the next game and the next moment. Owning the moment.
Owning the moment. What better way to put it than Alexander Steen with those three words going into tomorrow night's Game 5. Welcome in, everyone. A happy Wednesday, and this is Chili's Week in Hockey. 2 hours of hockey talk, the pre-Game 5 edition. Alex Ferrario, Mike Anderson, and Amy Mark scores with you. And boy, before we go any further, I think it just needs to start off with the main topic of tonight, the craziness of Amy Mark scores. Let me paint this picture for everybody. Amy's a runner.
Yes.
Amy is a avid runner, nonstop. Yes. Decides to go for the Boston Marathon, a dream of yours. Runs the Boston Marathon in a little over 3 hours.
Yes, I ran 309.
309. Gets on an airplane the next day. Flies home to St. Louis, lands at about what, 8:45, hops in an Uber, gets over to the Blues game, and then is there till 1 a.m.
That's right.
What a boss.
And I'm exhausted, and I think it's more from the traveling and also from running around Boston, because we had to check out hours before the flight. So we checked our bags at the South Station in Boston, and then toured Boston on foot for about 5 hours before we headed to the airport. So I think traveling is a harder marathon than the marathon itself. But no, it was amazing.
In all honesty, though, Amy, congratulations. I know you've been running marathons for a long time. It's awesome to hear that you accomplished this big dream to go to Boston and run this marathon. And even cooler than the Boston Marathon, you were at game two between Boston and Toronto.
I went to the Boston Bruins Toronto Maple Leafs game, and this was after Boston lost the first game at TD Garden, and it was rowdy and raucous. I talked to Joey Vitale about what to expect at this Boston Bruins playoff game, and he just said the crowd's crazy. The crowd is wild, and they are. The first thing I noticed is that the crowd chants aren't exactly family friendly in Boston.
What?
Yeah. And there weren't as many families, at least not in my section, at least not at this game, than there are at the Blues game.
You're telling me they just don't repeat over and over, "Let's go Bruins"?
They do not. I don't even know if I heard that one. I think this must have been the uncut or the director's cut or the unrated or whatever they call it version of the fan chants. Yes, it was a rowdy crowd, and that game was crazy because, yes, that was the game with the Nazem Kadri hit on Jake DeBrusk. We saw three people get kicked out, and we didn't even stay the whole time. It was a late game, and we had to, for obvious reasons, get to bed before 1 or 2 in the morning, and so we left with just a few minutes left in the game. But Yeah, I imagine even more people got kicked out later.
Well, yeah, well, we'll talk more about that game. But honestly, Amy, congratulations. And send the congratulations to Amy because she deserves it after running that that marathon in Boston. And speaking of marathons, I feel like we all ran a marathon after that game last night. Of course, an 8:30 puck drop. Wouldn't you expect, I think I even said it to Sam Masterson, our video and social media guru here at KMOX. I said it to him. I said, 8:30 starts always end in overtime. And he's like, God, I hope not. But of course, it went to overtime. But games 3 and 4 felt like marathons, Amy. I mean, you had the blowout that was the Winnipeg Jets victory in game 3. And then you had that OT disappointing loss for the Blues in game 4. And as Chris Kerber mentioned at the end of that montage, now we go back to Winnipeg's tied 2 games apiece.
You know, and you look at the numbers and how the numbers are different from the regular season to the postseason.
Yeah.
Of course, I know you guys talked about this on the fourth period about referees, right? Mm. They tend to put their whistles in their pockets for the postseason.
Well, you'd think.
You would think. But you look at the hit count. So far in these 4 games, the Blues have thrown 109 hits and Winnipeg 108.
Wow.
Somebody is on the receiving end of every one of those hits. Those are high numbers. You're talking about hit counts flirting with 30 for every single game.
Yeah. Well, and the dangerous factor in this is I don't know if you want this to go 7 games, which,
no.
Hey, this has the makings of 7 games, but it's funny. We talk about other games in the playoffs and we're like, well, yeah, let them go 7. Let them beat the tar out of each other and then they'll be weak in the next round. Well, you don't want that to happen to you. If we remember that conference finals season for the Blues, it was game 7 against the Blackhawks. And then I believe it was game 7 against the Dallas Stars before they made it to the San Jose Sharks. So you want to try and close this out by game 6 to move on and get a little bit some R&R before you start round 2.
Well, and that's why it's taking advantage of the opportunities you're given in the playoffs. And when you look at series, you have to close out when you have the opportunity to win a series in fewer games.
Yeah.
Obviously, goal number 1 is to win the series, whether you win it in 5 games or whether you win it in 7. But say this series goes 7 and the Blues win, you move on to round 2 and mm-hmm. you think no harm, no foul, even though the Blues just lost 2 in a row at home. You know, they made it past the first round. It doesn't really matter. I think it does matter as you accumulate postseason games. The teams that have played the higher number of playoff games have endured a lot more physical challenges. You talk about a team that's tired, a team that's fatigued. One game and the toll it takes on your body is raised exponentially in the postseason. It's different than a regular season game. And so, yes. Am I getting ahead of myself by saying, well, if you're going to win, you want to win in fewer games? You know, you got to take that with a grain of salt, but it does matter.
I'll say this. I'm not worried, concerned, nervous going into game 5 tomorrow night. We'll talk about why that is, and we'll look at the past couple of games next. By the way, you want to jump in, 314-436-7900, our telephone number and text line. You could tweet me at FerrarioKMOX, tweet Amy at Amy Mark Scores. We'll come back with more Chili's Week in Hockey. We got Joe Vitale coming up at about 8:30 tonight, all of it here on KMOX.
Now, more of Chili's Week in Hockey. On your voice of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX.
You know, let's talk about running a marathon. It's bringing back the Jordan Binnington effect that we talked about last week for me.
I mean, my heart stopped.
My groin hurts. Still. I didn't even do anything and it hurts. Right? I feel like that's my life when I'm talking to you about your running and be like, okay, well, all of my body hurts from just talking about that.
From just sitting down.
From just sitting down thinking about you running a marathon. Well, the Blues lost game in 3. Right now, this seems to be a road series as the Blues won 2 in Winnipeg. Winnipeg wins 2 in St. Louis. But as I said going into break, Amy, I'm not nervous because I think the Blues have played their best this season when they've been counted out. I mean, if you think about it, Kelly Chase's video, which played before each home game in the playoffs, which was phenomenally done, but he said it. Everyone counted us out. They said we shouldn't be here. And then look what happened. An 11-game win streak. One of the best records of any team in the National Hockey League from the end of January on, and making it into a playoff spot. To me, everyone is watching Winnipeg and saying, boy, they've turned it on. I don't think there's any stopping them right now. But that's when St. Louis seems to turn things around. And look, they've been a great road team this season. You've won the last three games in Winnipeg dating back to the regular season, one of those being a shutout, and you play two of the final three in Winnipeg. I'm okay with where the Blues are at right now.
I am nervous, but I think that's just the nature of the playoffs and me. I always get nervous. I ride the roller coaster harder in the postseason. Even in a regular season, you can let a couple games go by and think, everything's okay. You can't do that in the postseason. Every single period, every single minute matters. But you're right. This team does seem to play better once they've put themselves in a really bad position. Now, they're not in a bad position right now. The series is even, as Craig Berube said, it's a best 2 out of 3 now. Mm-hmm. It could have been a better position. I know it's the coulda, woulda, shoulda.
Right.
So you have to move on from that. You can't keep thinking, geez, we let an opportunity slip away. We let an opportunity, even if you win one game at home, you eke out a victory. You're up 3-1 going into Winnipeg. As you mentioned, that's a totally different scenario than 2-2. You have the chance to put Winnipeg in utter desperation mode. And they didn't. And they would have wanted to. But at the end of the day, you know, you look at would Craig Berube, before the series started, been okay if you said, you're going to go up into Winnipeg, you're going to win two games, the series is going to be 2-2. I think we all would have taken that. But what you hate is when you see the carrot on the end of the stick and you can't reach it.
Well, I think St. Louis benefited, too, from being up 2-0, because if you were only up by one game and then Winnipeg won two of them, I just think that you had the benefit of being up 2-0 to allow this. Now, it happened. You didn't want it to happen. Yes, we all would have preferred a sweep or a 3-1 series lead, but I think it just puts St. Louis in a different situation. Now, the biggest area of concern for me, and again, I'm not concerned for the Blues, but I am concerned about a specific area, is finding a way to shut down that top line. Look, you've allowed 15 points to the line of Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor. They've dominated both games in St. Louis. They have confidence right now. Dustin Byfuglien seems to be owning the ice when he's out there. Patrick Laine finding space when he's skating. Those are all areas that I think St. Louis needs to be concerned about. And we'll talk about this with Darren Driggar in the 9 o'clock hour. But St. Louis not only has to find a way to shut that down and eliminate their speed advantage, but then they also have to start trying to find some space for their own top guys and stop relying on Patrick Maroon and Oscar Sundquist to win them hockey games.
Right. I mean, you look at the players who are leading the teams, the Blues, in goals. It's Vladimir Tarasenko with 2, Oscar Sundquist with 2, David Perron with 2.
Yeah.
Ryan O'Reilly has 1 goal, and Braden Schenn doesn't even have a point yet.
And he's leading the team in hits.
And then you look at the Winnipeg Jets, Kyle Connor, 3 goals, 2 assists. Mark Scheifele, 2 goals, 3 assists. Dustin Byfuglien, 1 goal, 4 assists. Blake Wheeler, 1 goal, 4 assists.
Connor and Scheifele both with game winners in the last two games, too.
And so, you know, we talk so much about your top players have to be your top players and beat their top players.
Right.
And in the first two games, you had your secondary scoring winning those games, along with Jordan Binnington being a brick wall in net.
Of course.
So then you think, we're up 2-0. The top players haven't really kicked into gear yet. They need to kick into gear at home.
Yeah.
That top line needed to win those games at home, and they didn't. And you have to look at the other bench and say, well, the Winnipeg Jets played well. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just that certain players are underperforming. The Winnipeg Jets played well. But the successful teams have their top players producing. I mean, look at the Vegas Golden Knights. Mark Stone, Max Pacioretty, and Paul Stastny are leading the NHL in postseason points.
Yeah, we'll
then
talk.
You look at like the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Right.
Kucherov and Stamkos are silent.
Yeah, well, we'll talk about that Vegas line later on and what's up with that, because it's actually incredible what that second line is doing in the NHL right now. I don't think there's been many other lines that have done what Paul Stastny, Max Pacioretty, and Mark Stone have done so far through four games in the playoffs. But we're going to get Joe Vitale's thoughts on the games 3 and 4 and what's ahead in game 5. We're going to talk with him about that Ryan O'Reilly line and how to get them going as he is out in Winnipeg. He joins us next on Chili's Week in Hockey.
Now, back to Chili's Week in Hockey on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
There are some spankings going on right now around the National Hockey League. Right now, you got Boston and Toronto, Dallas and Nashville. We'll talk all about that in just a bit. Actually, we'll talk all about that in the 9 o'clock hour. But now, we got to get to our favorite segment of the night a little bit later this time. But hey, Boston Marathon's a little more important than Joe Vitale. But he joins us now from Winnipeg. Joe, great to have you hop on, buddy.
Alex, Amy, always good to chat with you. Love the conversations. Yes, I'm in Winnipeg. It's a little bit warmer this time, which is great, but having to come to Winnipeg, not my favorite thing in the world, but we knew this was going to be a tight series, and here we are.
How much warmer is it? I mean, let's be honest here. What, 3 degrees?
You know, I think it's like in the mid-50s up here, but honestly, it feels like 100. People are walking around in like T-shirts and like tank tops and shorts, and it's still like, it's pretty nippy out.
Yeah.
But I see the sidewalks, I see some grass, and I never thought Winnipeg had either of those two. So,
okay, so when you say there's nothing to do in Winnipeg, is there a bowling alley? Is there a movie theater?
Is there a Walmart?
A Walmart?
I mean, I'm not 90 years old. I'm sure there's a bowling alley somewhere, Amy. But you know what? No, Winnipeg is a great city, and there's a lot of cool things to do. You know, it's just, and the people up here are amazing. And that's where this city really shines. And I mean that sincerely. I'm not from Winnipeg. I have no biases. But I'm in the elevator coming up to my room, and people just randomly just spark conversations, and you're walking down the sidewalk and you don't just walk past someone with your head down. People ask how you're doing and have a good day. And it's Manitoba Nice is a real thing.
How does that compare to Pittsburgh? Was Pittsburgh like that when you played there?
No, it hasn't. It's different. Boston, you know, Amy just coming back from Boston.
Yeah.
Boston, I love Boston. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. Pittsburgh is close. But there is an attitude. There is some sort of character that those cities you represent. And if you're born into those cities, it's just something you adapt and you have in your lifestyle. But I don't know, the cold weather. And someone always told me that. Like Boston, the attitude, and New York and the Bronx, the attitude is because it's so cold, people are always on the move. They're always in a hurry because they're freezing. So they don't necessarily have the best manners at times. But, you know, to me, I'm up here in Winnipeg, and it's way colder and way more miserable than any other city I've ever been to. And people are reasonably nice, so I don't know.
Joey, I love talking to former players because I feel like you get the best answers, because obviously if you're a media member and you haven't played hockey, you don't really know. If you're a current player, you have to maintain a certain level of political correctness. But a former player, hey, you can say whatever you want, I think. So is there something to home ice advantage still, or is that a thing of the past in today's current NHL?
I will say this. I think the energy in the building is great, but I had a coach once tell me this, and it hit me like my third year. I think we were in Philadelphia, and Tony Granato said, guys, it's going to be loud. And I'm like, yeah, it's going to be loud. He goes, but how do you know they're not cheering for you? And it was kind of like a long pause, and I kind of thought about it. And I skated around in warm-ups, and it is loud. And he's right. Who's to say that they're voting for the Flyers and not us at the time? And it really was something where I learned to really feed off the energy. So the energy thing, I think it's kind of a wash. I think it's something that the writers like to write about, or like a storyline that, oh, the building's going to be rocking, the Blues are going to use this as momentum. To me, I don't know. I think both teams feed off energy, whether you're in their building or the other building. The other thing, which I think is probably more important, and this is maybe why we're seeing some of the home teams suffer in this playoff. I think when the home coach, has the last change, so he has the advantage for a matchup. So let's just take, for example, Paul Maurice tomorrow. He's going to have the final change, so he can do whatever he wants with the lines. He has a matchup. So it's more like a chess game. So it's more like a thinking game. And that coach is going to impose that on his players because he's going to direct his lines according to what Craig Berube does. Now, I say that because hockey and players, and I was there, you want it to kind of be mindless. You just want to get in that rhythm. You want to get in that kind of zone and just feel that flow of the game. Don't worry about the matchups. Don't worry about who you're playing against. Just you want to go out there, and we've all heard the famous cliche, right? We just want to focus on ourselves. Well, when the home coach has the final change, you're not just focusing on yourself. You're focused on the other team, too. So Ryan O'Reilly, for example, he's not just worried about his game. He's got to worry about when Craig Berube's going to put him out there because when Shifley's going to put out there. So you're kind of thinking about the other coach. You're thinking about the other team. You're thinking about the matchup. How do I shut this guy down and try to get to my game? So I think that sometimes players, they tend to think a little too much at home. Coaches, home coaches tend to think a little bit too much at home. While when you're on the road, you're just running lines and you're just playing your style, your rhythm. I think players really like that.
Joey, I know the Blues fans are curious after this team boarded the plane this afternoon, kind of what the vibe is around this team. And just at the airport for the few minutes that we were today for the media availability, it seemed like these guys were locked in. It doesn't seem like they're down. It doesn't seem like they're frustrated, but they are silent and they are motivated.
Yeah, you know, I think I would say it's a quiet, resilient or quiet focus about the group right now on the plane, in the hotel. Certainly it's not all smiles. Certainly there wasn't a lot of noise with the guys playing cards in the back of the plane and guys hooping and hollering, just kind of, you know, going about their business, laughing. But, you know, there is some good socialness kind of going on between the guys. There is smiles, but it is just this quiet focus. We get to the hotel and everyone's just kind of like, what are you doing for dinner? It's kind of making their plans. But you can tell that the guys are focused. Now is half of that, you know, concern, you know, maybe. But, you know, I've always felt that when this team has had a little bit of fear in their game, I think they're at their best. I think when players are feared a little bit or are fearful of the opponent or the situation or where they're on the standings, we've seen it all year long. When you have a little bit of that fear, I think that fear is healthy. We've come into some great buildings and some pretty fearful buildings throughout the league, Tampa, Nashville, Winnipeg, Vegas. I mean, we went to some pretty tough places with our backs against the wall, and when that fear comes, you really got to come together as a group, and I think this is what the Blues have shown, especially these first two games in Winnipeg. So I think that kind of concern is a good thing, and it's a healthy thing if it's managed the right way.
Well, and I said this to you yesterday before the puck dropped, a 2-2 series is very different than a 3-1 series, correct?
Oh, huge. I mean, if the Blues would have won last night, they're up 3-1. They have many opportunities just to close out one game. You just got to win one more, and you have a few opportunities to get there. Now, it really is, and Chris called it a pivotal game. I agree. I thought it was a very pivotal game last night. Now, with that being said, after talking to some of the players, talked to Steve Ott a little bit today, he said, you know, you're 2-2 after four. And at the start of the series, if you would have said to me, you're going to be 2-2 after four, you're going to be going into game five, and it's the best of three, would you take that? He would say, absolutely.
Heck yeah.
David Perron today, absolutely. You're playing the Winnipeg Jets. It's a tough building. If you can get the 2-2 after game four and then look at it in a situation where you just have to win two out of the next three, of course. And I think that's how this team is handling it. About a month into Craig Berube getting the job here in St. Louis, he looked at the standings, and the players always talk about this moment where he looked at the standings and he kind of threw them away. He erased it all. He said, forget about what's happened. We're starting fresh. I think in a small way, that's how they're going to be approaching game five. Yes, we have some things we need to learn. We have some good things. We have some bad things. But let's push it aside. It's an even series. Let's not worry about what's going on. Let's not worry about momentum. Let's not worry about how bad we played the other night. It's simple. You have to win two out of the next three. Let's start fresh tomorrow night.
Joey, I know this is a production-driven league, a results-driven league. So when you look at the top line of Ryan O'Reilly, Vladimir Tarasenko, and Braden Schenn, and you see that lack of production, do you see that as a consequence of them being outmatched or of them underperforming?
You know, Amy, that's a good question. I think it's a combination of both. And I know that Ryan O'Reilly has had his hands full in this series. Again, I think it's easy for me to sit here and criticize Ryan O'Reilly, Tarasenko, and Schenn about how they are underperforming. But sometimes you really just got to look across the ice, and you got to look at who they're going up against. Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, and Kyle Connor are maybe you put the Stone line up there for Vegas, but I think the Scheifele line is maybe the second hottest line in hockey right now. And this is a line that, like, I think the Blues have really not seen a lot of. You talk about top lines, you think of like guys like Patrick Kane or Skinner. I mean, the list kind of goes on and on. Johansson from Nashville, Jamie Benn, Tyler Seguin. But this line in Winnipeg, I am very impressed by that. Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler are big bodies, but they can move. They have long strides. They're strong on the puck. They cut back like Jaden Schwartz, and they're that big. It's pretty scary. Kyle Connor, he's the other winger. He is just absolutely burning his Jets all over the ice, and I think it's something that, you know, Ryan O'Reilly, Tarasenko, and Shen, they have a lot of gifts, right? Ryan O'Reilly is a competitor, maybe the best in the league. He stick checks better than anyone in the league. Tarasenko's got one of the most lethal shots in the league. Braden Shen is like a Swiss Army knife. He can do absolutely everything. So those are their gifts. Now, one thing they lack when you look at them across the board, the other first line of the Winnipeg Jets, they don't have as much speed. And I think the speed right now, the Jets' first line, is not only killing Ryan O'Reilly's line, but it's killing the St. Louis Blues. They're moving that quickly. So I think that Ryan O'Reilly has been given a position, this whole line has been given a position to come out there and given the task of not only shutting down this great line that's very hot right now, but also try to find your groove and try to find your game. Meanwhile, you're playing up against maybe arguably the biggest group of defensemen in the National Hockey League, and you're facing a Connor Hellebuck goaltender who's playing very well. It's not easy. I think it's a combination of the Jets playing that good, but you know, you can look at it across the board, and I think that for the Blues to continue to move forward in this series, and this is the truth, I think that this top line needs to get moving. You can only rely so much on the Bozak line. You can only rely so much on the Sundquist line. It needs to be the Stars. It needs to be Tarasenko like he did last night on the power play. It needs to be Braden Shen getting the dirty one. It needs to be Ryan O'Reilly fishing one out in the corner, getting to the point and then crashing that and hitting off his shin pad. Those are the kind of goals that I truly believe are going to get this Blues team past the series number one.
Braden Shen has been a physical monster for this Blues team. I believe he still leads the team in hits so far this series. But do you feel like that could be taking away from his game, Joey, where he's going out there and throwing his body around and finishing off of those checks, but maybe that's exhausting him to the point where he can't contribute offensively?
That's a fair argument. I think it's a very fair argument. I mean, Braden Shen realistically is hitting more in these last four games that I've seen him hit all year. Now, he's still been physical all year. That's a big part of his game. He's definitely throwing his body around. But these last four games, especially the two in St. Louis, I think he had three hits after the first period the other night, maybe six after the first two. He is hitting more than usual, and that does take a lot out of you. And he's not hitting small bodies. He's going after Dustin Byfuglien. He's going after Sherratt. He's going after Tyler Myers. These are big bodies, and it does waste a lot of energy. I think the energy, physically, he can keep up with it. I just think it's more of a mindset. I think if for Braden Shen to go out there and be focused just on hitting, that's detrimental to this first line. But if there's a hit available, he's going to finish his check, and that's part of his game. I think that not only Braden Shen, but the Blues as a whole, I think this is something that's been brought up a lot. And how do you match the physicality of the Winnipeg Jets? And I think if you look at the Blues, when they're at their best this year, in February, through that 11-game stretch, or the fact that they went from being last all the way back to a playoff berth, I wouldn't say they were an overly physical team. And I don't think it's very important for the Blues to switch that game now just because you're playing a heavy team. You want to focus on what you do very well. So for the Blues to go out here and get a lot of hits, yeah, that's great. But if that's to the point where it's taking you away from your game, you almost have to look at it, yeah, like that's actually hurting you more than helping.
But isn't it a little bit of a catch-22? Because if you're dominating in puck possession, you're probably not dominating in hits.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. I mean, yeah, but you know, but it's so back and forth, and I think that some series is maybe that's the case, but this series is just so back and forth. I don't know if puck possession is really leading to a big key to the hits. Either way, because like we were saying, you know, it just seems like last game, for example, that was just back and forth, chances back and forth, saves back and forth. I don't really look at a lot of stretches in that game, maybe a little bit late in the third and early overtime for the Jets. But other than that, I think it was pretty evenly matched as far as you don't look at one team and say, geez, they've been in our zone for, you know, 2 minutes, or we haven't been in their zone for 5 minutes.
Alex Pietrangelo leads this team in time on ice. He also leads the team in points, averaging over a point per game. How would you assess his performance in this series so far?
You know, Pietrangelo, I think he's been good. I think if you ask him, he would like to say that he probably could be better at times. I think that defensively, that's where I've seen him be a strength. I think he's shut down players, shut down lines, especially that second and third line of the Winnipeg Jets, fairly well as Parayko and Bomeister having taken the Shively line for the most part. You know, you look at his toe pick, he misses that hit in the neutral zone yesterday that sets up the equalizer. Yes, it's a mistake, but it's a mistake out of aggression, and Craig Berube will never discipline a player for making a mistake out of aggression. I think one area that not only Pietrangelo, but also the all the defensemen can start working on and get better at in the series, and they need to be better at in the series, is contributing on the offense. We all know that they don't have any goals yet, which is, you know, alarming because of how well they, you know, how well the defenseman did lead in the league for the majority of the year on the back end in goals. He had three players with plus 10 goals on that back end. For them heading into game five to not have a goal is surprising, but I don't think it's a shock. I think if you look at the games, the production is coming from the forwards because the defensemen are not moving their feet nearly as much. And whether that's a product of trying to be defensive first or being defensive-minded to protect your net first, whatever the case may be, but when this team is at their best, when Alex Pietrangelo is at his best, it's when they're coming out of the defensive zone together and it's coming out in four. Not three forwards going up the ice, there's four. There's Pietrangelo, he's going from behind his net. Jeez, God, what game was that? I think it was one of the late games at the end of the year. Who was the big – oh, I think it was Lucic on – in Edmonton, he smokes Lucic behind his own net. He was actually the one that went all the way up on the rush. He got a pass wide and put it under the bar for a goal in that Edmonton Oilers game when they blew him out at home. That was one of the first goals of the game. That's Pietrangelo's game. That's one of his gifts, his ability to close plays in the defensive zone, get on his horse, and get up the ice, move your feet. We saw Colton Parayko do it a couple games ago. He's in the defensive zone. He's got a little bit of daylight, a little bit of ice, and boom. He goes, he skates, he moves up the ice, he draws that penalty, which set up a little bit of a five-on-five goal, but it was a product of the power play having a little momentum from Parayko drawing that penalty. This is something that, for whatever reason, whether it's structurally or just something the Blues just can't get instilled in their game, but the defensemen have not been moving up, and that's going to need to change. If they want to improve and continue to move forward in this series, an area of improvement is defense and moving up. It just puts everyone back, pushes everyone back, especially when defensemen attacks to the middle, bounces it out and just continues to drive. That's when that defenseman is going to have to trust you. You have to take them with you to the net, and that's when that little area opens up right behind the net drive, and that's where those forwards can slip in for some nice shots. We've seen them do it all year long, but it has not been happening in the series.
Joe, I can't wait to get this one underway tomorrow night. Thank you so much for hopping on with us. I know you got to get some rest, but thank you again for coming on tonight, and we'll talk to you tomorrow for Puck Drop against the Blues and Jets. We'll come back, talk Selke, because Ryan O'Reilly is officially a finalist, but Amy's got some pretty interesting stats we'll get into next.
Now, more of Joey's Week in Hockey on your voice of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX.
Well, it's award season in the National Hockey League, and earlier today, the finalists for the Selke Trophy were announced. Patrice Bergeron is a finalist, to no one's surprise.
Eight consecutive years.
There you go.
Jeez.
Mark Stone is a finalist, and so is the St. Louis Blues' very own Ryan O'Reilly. Finally, an underappreciated defensive forward. The Selke Trophy goes out to the forward, or the best defensive forward in the NHL.
I think Selke's gonna win it. Of course Selke's gonna win it. Selke wins it every year. No, I think Ryan O'Reilly's gonna win it. I mean, it just, the way he's played this season, I think has taken everybody by storm to watch how he's changed his game for the St. Louis Blues.
So here is why there might be slim chances for O'Reilly to win it. Frank J. Selke does not treat newcomers kindly. Six of the last seven Selke Trophy winners, or Selke trophies, I should say, have gone to the same two players. Last year, it was Anze Kopitar.
Going to him this year.
Then Patrice Bergeron. Before that, Kopitar. Before that, Bergeron. Before that, Bergeron. Then Jonathan Toews in 2013, 2012, Bergeron again. He's won it four times.
Wow.
Bergeron has in the past 7 years. So my question to you is, is the Selke Trophy weighted too heavily on reputation, or is Bergeron really the best for and Anze Kopitar for that many years?
I think
no one's better in the past 7 years.
I think it is weighted on reputation. Honestly, I think the writers just get that they get that feel for one guy and they watch the way that he plays. I mean, look, you win it once, all eyes are going to focus on that person. So at the end of the year, if you're not watching every team play every game, you don't know who the best defensive forward is, because you cannot judge defensive forward by plus minus.
Right.
You got to watch how they play. And I think if you just know Bergeron has won it in the past, and then you have the list of nominees in front of you, you're going to go with the guy that you know has won it before, and then let the votes take care of themselves.
You know, and it's interesting because when you look at the winners like Patrice Bergeron and Kopitar, they tend to have, and even Pavel Datsyuk, right, going back to when he won it three times in a row from 2008 to 2010, they tend to have the same numbers, kind of that 25 to 35 goal score. And usually around a plus 20, somewhere around there. The numbers look very similar.
Yeah, they are. And again, I think it's not like the best defenseman or the Hart Trophy winner, because you're going off of the way that the guy has played. But I will say this, I have a strong feel Ryan O'Reilly is going to take it this year. I mean, we chatted with Scott Burnside a couple weeks ago, and we're going to chat with Darren Dreger in the 9 o'clock hour a little bit up on his thoughts on that. So we'll see kind of where Ryan O'Reilly falls, but one more hour of hockey talk to get into next on KMOX.
Now, back to Chili's Week in Hockey on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
Just because I'm doing more research on this in terms of the Selke Trophy. So Mark Stone led the NHL in takeaways this season, 122. Ryan O'Reilly, a plus 22, which was better than Mark Stone, one less than Patrice Bergeron. And then Patrice Bergeron tied for the most Selke Trophy awards in the NHL. So I think it comes down to O'Reilly and Bergeron. This is just my opinion. But listen to how identical these two players are. So Bergeron in 65 games played, 32 goals, 47 assists, 79 points. Ryan O'Reilly in 82 games played, 28 goals, 49 assists, 77 points. Bergeron a plus 23, O'Reilly a plus 22. In terms of points per game, Bergeron 1.22, O'Reilly 0.94. In terms of shots, total 234 for O'Reilly, 205 for Bergeron. And then you get to the time on ice averaging per game, 20 minutes and 46 seconds for O'Reilly, 18 minutes and 28 seconds for Bergeron. So if they take this into consideration based off of points alone, which they shouldn't, Bergeron's going to win because he played 17 games less than O'Reilly. But if you're going to take this into best defensive forward, a guy who played every game this season, a guy who was a plus 22, a guy who had a career high in points, and a guy who played the most minutes of any forward on their roster, he deserves it over Patrice Bergeron.
And don't you have to throw faceoffs into the mix?
I think you do.
I mean, when
defensive zone faceoffs.
Yes, when you look at his defensive zone faceoffs, how can you not count that in the Selke Trophy categories?
Overall faceoffs, 56.6% for Bergeron, 56.9%. But you have to take into consideration the 17 games that Bergeron missed.
Right.
Now, if you look at it and say, well, he's played 17 more games, he'd have a higher number. All I'm saying is you can find a debate on either side of this, but I think it's going to come down to Bergeron and O'Reilly. And my gut feel, O'Reilly's going to pull it out. That's just my gut feel on this one.
Zedar's face-off win for Yanni Gord, and this one is over. Congratulations to the Blue Jackets. They sweep the Lightning. It's their first ever series win. The Lightning tried to battle back on a couple of occasions, but could not make the play when they needed to in the third. And the Lightning had a record-breaking regular season, but go out in four straight in the playoffs.
It's sad that that freaking cannon just made me jump, and I'm not even, like, it's not even a live game. It still makes me jump.
Can you? I think the only people who hate it more are the Tampa Bay Lightning in that moment.
I think of
the last thing in the world that you would want to hear after a historic regular season and you get swept in the first round is that stupid cannon.
And they heard it seven times. Like, just to put ice, or not ice, put salt in the wound. I don't know why I said ice there.
Well, I think you were going to say icing on the cake.
Icing on the cake, salt on the wound, whatever you look at it. Three empty netters. So that cannon goes off three more times to remind you that you are going to be swept. Side note, but hilarious tweet yesterday. So the beat writer Aaron Portsline for the Columbus Blue Jackets put this out that apparently Columbus was saying that you cannot bring brooms into the arena for safety precautions. And then he responded with, but they can shoot off a World War II era cannon seven times in a hockey game. Makes no sense to me. But that's the way it goes.
Well, and after the loss, the Tampa Bay Lightning Twitter crew tweeted out, "We don't have any words, and we know you don't want to hear them. Mm. We understand your anger, your frustration, your sadness, everything you're feeling. We get it. This isn't the ending we imagined, and certainly not the one we wanted. Thank you for being there the entire way."
I'll say this, classy move by the Tampa Bay Lightning to tweet out a congratulatory tweet to the Columbus Blue Jackets for beating them. But look, I want to look at this from the side of the Columbus Blue Jackets rather than the side of the Tampa Bay Lightning, because I know what everyone's going to say. Well, 60 wins, the President's Trophy curse. However you want to look at it, you know, quick note on that. Regular season doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
You win 60 games, you don't lose three in a row all season. All of that is erroneous once you hit the playoffs. But from the Columbus Blue Jackets side, you really have to appreciate what Jarmo Kekalainen did with that team. I mean, they had a decision to make, Amy, where they looked at Bobrovsky and looked at Panarin and said, these guys are gone after this season. There's not much we can do. The only thing we can do to try and keep them is to go win a Stanley Cup or put a team together that looks like we could win a Stanley Cup. So instead of trading away Panarin or Bobrovsky, who Bobrovsky was having a rough season. I mean, he was pulled a couple of times. They started the backup. Instead of trading those guys away, Kekalainen went out and said, you know what? Screw the mortgaging the future. We're going to go out and bring in players that can help this. He went out and acquired Matt Duchene. He acquired Ryan Zingel. He acquired Adam McQuaid. He acquired Keith Kincaid, which showed that team that the faith was put in them to go win a Stanley Cup. And I think that's why they came together in the playoffs and were able to take down Tampa Bay. There is something to be said about adding not just one player, but adding numerous players at the trade deadline to instill faith in your roster.
Well, and there's a great article in The Athletic titled Piano Man, and it talks about the way Jarmo Kekalainen constructed this Columbus Blue Jackets team. Yeah. And also why nobody could really see what direction he was going to take come the 2019 trade deadline. Why nobody really could see his long-term vision. Were they going to be buyers? Were they going to be sellers? Were they going to be both? And so Kekalainen gave up his 2019 first round pick and potentially
the 2020
yeah, to Ottawa when they acquired Duchene. But even that move alone didn't let the world know that they were buyers, because many people thought, well, maybe Panarin's going to go or Bobrovsky's going to go. And as this Athletic article explains, Matt Duchene said he was soon told differently. He was told that both Bob and Brad were going to stay, and that it was, quote, an all-in thing.
Well, and it says in the article also that Nick Foligno, the captain for the Columbus Blue Jackets, texted Kekalainen and said thank you afterwards, because he's dealing with so much stress of, are these guys going to be gone? And again, who knows if they're going to stay there, but what better way to try and convince these guys to stay where they're at than go out and put on a contest and see if you can win the Stanley Cup or at least make it to the finals? Because if you can, well, maybe they want to come back and try and do some unfinished business. But the other side of it is, yeah, maybe they go out and try and get paid big for what they're doing. But you just really have to appreciate what Jarmo Kekalainen has done with this team. And I mean, Amy, this is a team that was an expansion in 2000.
Yeah.
You know, they draft Rick Nash and have such success with him, and they move on from Rick Nash. But then they go into this little hole where they're unable to do anything. But this goes beyond the guys that they've selected and traded for. In the article, it talks about, I'm going to butcher this guy's name, but Texera, I believe his name. He's a rookie. He scored 2 goals in the fourth game. He was selected in the second round. The, Edward LeBlanc, the centerman for Columbus, he was selected ahead of that Puljujarvi from the Edmonton Oilers, who's been a bust so far for Edmonton. Then you got the Seth Jones trade. Ryan Johansson doesn't have a point in the series with the Nashville Predators. Seth Jones has 3. You have to appreciate what a general manager does in this situation of not mortgaging the future, giving up some draft picks, but putting together a team that can actually do something.
Right. And it also breaks the narrative that Sergei Bobrovsky cannot perform in the playoffs, because right. not only did he play well, but he played well against the best yep. offense in the National Hockey League this year and a historically good team. And then also, they've already hit one success mark because they're in the second round for the first time in franchise history. Yep. Because people have to know that that expansion in 2000 was a much different expansion yeah. than what we just saw with the Vegas Golden Knights and the way they made out like bandits.
It was a bad expansion.
They cleaned house, yeah. And so, you know, the Columbus Blue Jackets, what Jarmo Kekalainen has done is an incredible, I guess you could look at it as a grassroots or just a true deep construction of a yeah. team. Now, how the Blue Jackets fare from here on out in the playoffs will go on to be a testament to Kekalainen's skills as a general manager. But I feel the same way with the Blues in the playoffs and the moves that Doug Armstrong has made. Because if you were to bullet point the moves that Armstrong has made with the draft and then with trades and signing free agents as of late, he has made some moves that show at the same level as I would put this Kekalainen.
Yeah, well, and I disagree with you on the moves with Kekalainen moving into the next round. Like, I think he's already shown what he needs to, and now it's just, look, if you can make it, you can make it. That's the way the playoffs go. The fact that you just beat the best team in the National Hockey League, a team that had 60 wins, like, I think people are okay with
yeah,
what he's
but,
done.
You know, people have short memories, and they are going to sooner forget how good Tampa was before they would ever forget that if Columbus were to fail in the second round.
But what would they be frustrated about with Kekalainen if they don't make it past the second round?
Just look like, well, what do those moves do if you can't get past the second round? It just, the standard
yeah.
shifts.
But you also take into consideration what the, you have Zingle, I believe, or is he a free agent after this year? Well, Duchesne's a free agent, but I bet you any money if they don't keep Panarin, they're going to try and keep Matt Duchesne. And if Zingle's at least available with them for another year, then you still have that piece. And again, who knows if Bobrovsky stays or if he's a free agent. Thank you, Mike. So both of them are free agents. But look, if you lose Panarin and Bobrovsky, you make an attempt to try and keep those guys.
It's not a success. If you don't keep those guys, if the team changes and you have a different makeup next year or they don't have success next year, no one is going to look at this and go, well, look what he did. He got him to the second round.
I agree. I don't think it's a success, but I don't think people will be upset with Kekalainen because I think they got what they wanted out of him. Yeah. And now it's just a matter of, because you got to go with the storyline of what takes place also, right? Like, if Bobrovsky falls apart, well, then you're not upset about trading those first picks. You're upset that the goaltender couldn't stop the puck.
Right.
Now, if Duchesne and Zingle don't do anything in the second round, then you're like, okay, well, what was the whole point of this? So the storylines are very interesting. And by the way, I got to correct myself. Mike Anderson, thank you. It was not LeBlanc that I said. It was Pierre-Luc Dubois, mm-hmm. and he was selected third overall in 2016, but he was taken over that Jesse Puljujärvi from Edmonton, who was fourth overall, who has not had a lot of success. So again, smart move by Kekalainen. But I'll go back to your point about Doug Armstrong. Yes, I think Doug Armstrong deserves as much applause right. as Jarmo Kekalainen does. And honestly, I'd put him into consideration for GM of the year.
Yeah.
And I think Kekalainen probably deserves it for what he did at the trade deadline. But you look at getting into the playoffs, it was the move from Doug Armstrong of acquiring Ryan O'Reilly. You look at the success of Pat Maroon. You look at the depth of Michael Delzato bringing him in to help this team.
David Perron.
David Perron as well. But then the other one that I think people really overlook is Jordan Binnington.
Yeah.
And I mean, look, I understand you never really know what's going to happen with draft picks, but they got Jordan Binnington and Joel Edmondson for Eric Brewer.
And then able to sign Joel Edmondson to that bridge deal.
Exactly.
So that you can get the cap to work.
And you got Binnington in enough games where he's a restricted free agent, so he's your property at the end of this year.
And the decision to keep Robert Thomas up and say you're not going to yeah. play in the World Juniors and we're not sending you back down. All those decisions yep. could have changed definitely the composite of this team, but the trajectory.
I wouldn't be surprised if Doug Armstrong's top three this year in terms of GM of the year, which would be his second award, I believe, since being with the St. Louis Blues. So again, props to him, but really props to Props to Jarmo Kekalainen. Let me ask you this, Amy, before we head to the break and get Darren Dreger on. Is this the end of an era in Tampa Bay? Steve Yzerman is gone. You have Stamkos and Kucherov locked up. You have to lock up some of the younger players, but you're going to have some cap issues with all of the players that you have under contract.
Right.
Is this an end of an era?
Do you know, I think, I don't know if this is the end of the era, but I think this was the apex of the era.
You have to make moves.
Yep. If you look at, well, you know, the graph of the Tampa Bay Lightning, they peaked this year with their talent, with their team, with their makeup. Does it mean that they won't win next year or 2 years from now? No, but I do think this is the best Tampa Bay Lightning team. And I would liken it to the 2004 Cardinals, who many of those players have said that was the best Cardinals team they were ever on, even though they won in 2006 and lost in 2004. And I think that's what you might see with the Tampa Bay Lightning. I don't think the window is closed, but they have peaked, and I do think it's a downhill slide.
Who do you move if you're them? You're not moving Kucherov. No. You're not moving Stamkos. You're not moving Vasilevsky. You're not moving Hedman. Who do you move?
Gosh, I'd have to look at the
numbers. You'd have to move one of your defensemen, like a McDonough or Strawman. And since we're on this topic, and I know
you're not moving Hedman.
No, you're not moving Hedman at all. But since we're on this topic, is this the end of an era in Pittsburgh?
I think it is.
Okay, save that thought. We're going to hit on that after Darren Dreger. We got to get to him next on Chili's Week in Hockey.
Now, more of Chili's Week in Hockey on your voice of the St. Louis Blues, KMOX.
We're back in on a Wednesday night. We'll get into some of the games going on around the National Hockey League in our next segment. The Toronto Maple Leafs-Boston Bruins game just wrapped up. About 10 minutes to go in the Dallas-Nashville game, and then you got Calgary and Colorado later on tonight. Of course, Game 5 tomorrow between the Blues and Winnipeg Jets. 2-2 series tied, and Darren Dreger of the TSN, he's the hockey insider for TSN in Canada. He's been watching this team all series long, and he joins us now on Chili's Week in Hockey. Darren, it's great to have you hop on tonight, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Arrived in Winnipeg not that long ago, and ready for Game 5.
It's been a
pretty fun series. Obviously, the home team hasn't fared well, but perhaps that can change in Game 5.
Are you surprised by that? And you've been watching this series from Game 1, but are you surprised at the road teams having all of the success? Because both of these teams ended the regular season pretty darn good at home.
Yeah, a little bit surprised, to be fair. I mean, you're talking about two very good teams, well-coached teams, that you would think would find a way to exploit the advantage of having the home ice advantage, and yet United side has really been able to do that. And I just wonder, though, if it's about, you know, pushing uphill. And both these teams do that so well as well. I mean, St. Louis comes into Winnipeg to open up the series, and they knew that, you know, they were in enemy territory, and it was going to be a significant challenge. And they were revved up and came ready for battle, and they won the first two. And, you know, Winnipeg didn't have a choice. They had to answer in Game 3, and they found a way to get it done. And then you go into Game 4 and you go into an overtime situation, and obviously anything can happen there. And I thought that Winnipeg was really good in Game 4, but as promised, I thought the St. Louis Blues found a way to match the intensity of the Winnipeg Jets in Game 4. You know, you get a bounce here or there, you know, stuff happens in an overtime scenario, and now the series is even at 2. So there really isn't an explanation for why home ice hasn't been an advantage, other than the fact that you've got two pretty balanced clubs, and maybe they just kind of elevate their own intensity when they're on the road.
Darren, we've seen this in a couple of series so far this postseason, but why do top lines go silent in the playoffs?
Well, normally what happens, you know, especially in a best of seven, is your top six, not just your top line, you'll nullify each other. When you've got two very balanced, even teams, often that's what happens. And, you know, obviously from the first two games of the series, you know, Paul Maurice wanted to get Mark Scheifele away from Ryan O'Reilly. And he liked the Lowry matchup. And then you shift over to St. Louis. Craig Berube is trying to get, you know, the Ryan O'Reilly top line for the St. Louis Blues away from the Lowry line. So that's why depth is so important in the Stanley Cup playoffs, because, you know, this isn't new. This isn't unusual. top lines and top six will actually wipe each other out when they're playing. In saying that, I'm not trying to make excuses here. You know, the Scheifele line with Wheeler and Kyle Connor was obviously the difference last night. So they found a way to elevate their game. Tarasenko with a couple of goals for the Blues. So now it's up to Ryan O'Reilly and it's up to Braden Schenn to find a way to be impact players in Game 5. They're certainly capable. So I don't know that the top line story has been entirely written just yet.
Darren, you've watched the playoffs for a long time in your career. How different is a Game 5 when it's tied 2-2 rather than a 3-1 series lead?
Well, it is definitely different for sure. I mean, both teams obviously know that the series isn't going to be decided in Winnipeg tomorrow. So maybe they'll be a little bit more cautious, but I doubt it. I mean, I was surprised, not at the level of intensity of Game 4. I mean, I think that we could predict that, given all the character on both sides. What I was surprised by was the willingness to swap chances. I thought that was an excellent, entertaining hockey game. For a low-scoring game, that was a terrific display. And I look for more of that in Game 5. I think now that it's the best of three, you've got two clubs that want to prove that, they've got the edge. And there's a big difference, as you guys know, when you're going into an elimination game, which Game 6 is going to be. So, who wants it more? That's where we're at in this best of three. Who wants it more? I mean, the Blues are super confident coming into Winnipeg because of the success that they had in the first two games. But obviously, there's no denying the fact that, the Winnipeg Jets, found their extra gear, if you will, in St. Louis. And, if they've got another gear to go here in the first round, then they'd better dig it up for Game 5. Otherwise, there could be problems.
What are your thoughts on rookie goaltender Jordan Binnington and his postseason debut?
What's not to love about Jordan Binnington, the story that's been told to this point, and it hasn't been written yet. There's more chapters potentially here that could get written. When Binnington came in, you could start to see things were turning a little bit. And Jake Allen has been forgotten in all this. But, yes, of course, Jordan Binnington is the bigger and the better story. But I want to give some credit to Jake Allen because he's been part of a goaltending tandem that has stabilized for the St. Louis Blues and gave them enough confidence for the character and the leadership of this team to take over. And there was a coaching change along the way, and I'm a big believer in Craig Berube. I mean, I can tell you this, other coaches around the National Hockey League, including a coach that he's up against right now, and Paul Maurice, have nothing but the highest respect for Craig Berube and consider him to be a Jack Adams candidate, given how he, wrestled the St. Louis Blues out of the basement and turned them into a top-contending team in the Western Conference. Well, none of that happens without Jordan Binnington seizing an opportunity. And I thought he had a tremendous bounce-back game in Game 4. I think that, he got hung out to dry a little bit in Game 3. That game wasn't as lopsided as it turned out to be from a score perspective. And if not for Binnington, and I think Berube acknowledged this post-game, in the first period it could have been 3-4-0 in favor of Winnipeg. So he's a breath of fresh air, because I don't think he knows how good he is just yet. So there's probably a lot more to come from Binnington.
It says a lot about a head coach, doesn't it, Darren, who can not only help a team regain its confidence, but can help a team gain chemistry and be as close as this Blues team is compared to the beginning of the season where the rumors were that nobody wanted to get along in that locker room.
Right. Well, I can tell you this, knowing Craig Berube, as I do, and having nothing but the utmost respect for how he played the game, Berube was a glue guy when he played in the National Hockey League. He made teams better. That's not something that you develop or can be coached into you or any of that. I feel like you're almost born with that character quality. So I think that's a big part of it. And his hockey knowledge is second to none. I mean, you don't coach in the National Hockey League without being very good tactfully, and he is that. But he's also not soft in any shape of the word. He holds guys accountable. Like, I'll tell you what, I mean, I've watched two morning skates in four games that have been played in this series, where Berube used some pretty colorful language to get the attention of his guys on game day because he didn't like the pace. He didn't like the tempo. He didn't think that they were going as hard as they needed to go. So he's all in, and he expects the same from every player associated with the St. Louis Blues organizationally, not just in the NHL, and I think he's got a real good buy-in.
Taryn, the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Columbus Blue Jackets series saw the upset of the century, some would say. Do you currently hold a Dewey defeats Truman playoff bracket in your own hand?
Well, it's as wild as it gets. I mean, who's kidding who? And I would have expected the St. Louis Blues to come out of the East. I mean, just based on how well they played throughout the regular season, obviously. But when a general manager like Jarmo Kekalainen goes to the lengths that he went to at the trade deadline and spends assets, future assets, you know, that could really come at the expense of the organization. We don't know just yet to acquire Matt Duchene and Ryan DeZingle, and he brings in a depth defenseman, Adam McQuaid. There's a general manager that has convinced his ownership, we need to go all in here, because this is a group that has a window closing with Artemi Panarin, pending a restricted free agent, likewise for Bobrovsky and Shane and DeZingle. So for him to convince that group that it was worth the risk, man, there's got to be hockey gods that smile down. And in this case, they 100% did. So, you know, I feel poorly for, you know, all the good people of the Tampa Bay Lightning. But as Steven Stamkos said post-game, it doesn't matter what you do in the regular season. So here's our most obvious and our most glaring and our most jarring example of what that truly means. And there's no doubt that the Columbus Blue Jackets have some mojo working in their favor. And I'll tell you what, it wouldn't be wise to bet against this team now. It's all bets off. You know, when you look at what that Eastern Conference might look like moving forward.
That's what's really funny about the East now, and still we have two other first-round series that are going on. But to me, Darren, the two most dangerous teams right now and the two teams that have confidence probably at the ceiling, the New York Islanders or the Columbus Blue Jackets. I mean, you got Columbus who just sweeps Tampa Bay, but then you got the Islanders who I don't think anybody expected to be in this position, but then just swept Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
No, I mean, come on. I wouldn't have put a whole lot of money down against the Islanders. I thought that was a series that could go six or seven. But if you're getting into a six or a seven-game series, I'm not betting against Sidney Crosby, the experience of the Pittsburgh Penguins. I can recall it was just before Christmas. I was in Winnipeg. I was doing a Jets-Penguins game, and the general manager of the Pittsburgh Penguins, Jimmy Rutherford, and I were having a chat, you know, after the morning skate, and he said, look, we feel real confident about this group, and we feel like we've got a chance to win the Stanley Cup if not this year, then next year. Well, you don't get swept and not reel from that experience. So we know Jimmy to be a real hands-on general manager. He's always been that way. He's always found ways to improve his roster leading up to the trade deadline. So, you know, based on what I do for a living as a hockey insider, he's going to be on speed dial because I want to see what the Pittsburgh Penguins have planned as they now have to prepare for the offseason to get ready for next year. And as far as the Islanders are concerned, you know, it starts with tremendous coaching, and they've got that in Terry Trotz. I mean, that's pretty clear. And it's about opportunity. You know, they lose their star and the face of the franchise, John Tavares, who signs with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Well, all that did was clear out space for others to take a leadership role, and a number of guys have embraced that. So I'm happy for the New York Islanders, not because they dispatched the Pittsburgh Penguins. I'm just glad that Robin Leonard is getting rewarded for a tremendous year, and there's so many good stories that are coming out of the Islanders.
It was just announced that Ryan O'Reilly is a finalist for the Selke Trophy along with Patrice Bergeron and Mark Stone. What do you think of O'Reilly's chances to come out with his first Selke?
Well, I couldn't tell you this, but I'm going to publicly. I'm one of the major voters for the award, so I put O'Reilly number one on my ballot.
Wow.
And I'm not just saying this because it's St. Louis program.
You tell that to everybody, don't you?
Yeah, but I mean, he is so good. And look, he's he's got another gear, and so does Braden Shen. We've already talked about that. I think that they're going to be at their best tomorrow night in Winnipeg. But just everything that he does around the game, I'm impressed with. But he's in heady company when you, you know, Patrice Bergeron, I don't know. I want to find the fountain of youth that he continues to sip from, because he seems to get better and better every year. And as long as he can stay healthy, he is going to be that type of impact player. But I don't know how the vote is going to go. I mean, we know, we've seen it, the three finalists are right now, but I'm just going on record as saying I took Ryan O'Reilly first overall.
Well, we love hearing that in St. Louis. Darren, it is great to get to chat with you, and I know you were in St. Louis and now out in Winnipeg for Game 5, so thank you so much for taking some time out of your busy day to hop on with us and talk a little Blues and Jets, and we plan on seeing you back in St. Louis for Game 6.
You bet. It's been my pleasure. It's been a wonderful series, and I'm looking forward to a Game 7, and then we can flip a coin to decide who wins.
I think we're all looking forward to a Game 7. Darren, thank you so much for actually, let me rephrase that. Let's end this in 6, just for my own safety. I don't really need an ulcer going into Game 7. We'll come back and talk about some of the other games going on around the playoffs. It's Chili's Week in Hockey on KMOX. Amy's hitting that Boston Marathon wall.
Yeah,
She's hitting it. She's hitting it as we're wrapping up Chili's Week in Hockey.
I've got a bottle of Mountain Dew that I've been drinking, but it's not working.
Well, real quick, Amy, before we get to what's up with that, I wanted to touch on a couple things. I asked you the question, Penguins have been swept. Mm-hmm. Now they're out. Is that the end of an era for Pittsburgh? Do we see a major move at the end of this season?
I think it is the end of an era for Pittsburgh. What they might have to do is, I guess, like the Detroit Red Wings did, like a partial breakdown. I don't even know if you can call it a breakdown. It's just moving around of pieces, like when Detroit won in 2002 and right. then in 2008.
Who do you move? You don't move Crosby, obviously, but do you move?
You can't.
Would
move
you
Malkin.
Move Malkin or would
no.
you move Letang? Or, I'm sorry. Yeah, Letang or Kessel. Nobody's going to take Kessel. So
there you go. You answered your question.
Well, I mean, I guess someone will take Kessel, but I think you move Malkin. I think you're going to get the best return for Evgeny Malkin.
Oh, that'd be so hard to move Gino. I mean,
it would be, but I think that's going to be your best return.
Ah, oh, that like hurts my heart.
Is he willing to come to St. Louis?
So you posed this question earlier. How do you feel about the Nashville Predators?
I think the Nashville Predators are done.
So,
honestly, I think
this is their last. Well,
no, this chance. Isn't their last. They still have some people, but I'd say Pecorine's done. And I'd say I wouldn't be surprised if they moved one or two of those forwards. I mean, you're not going to bring back Wayne Simmonds because he didn't do much for you, but maybe you move on from Ryan Johansson.
I was going to say, like, you move Johansson.
Kyle Turris, or you move one of those defensemen because you got so many of them. But you're going to have to do something because I think they've hit their wall. I mean, look, you're going to lose to Dallas 5-1 tonight, 2-2 series, but I don't know if Nashville comes back from it.
Yeah.
Dallas is going to be a tough team in the second round if that's where the Blues will be headed after they take on the Winnipeg Jets. We'll preview Game 5, and we'll hit what's up with that next on Chili's Week in Hockey.
Now, what's up with that on Chili's Week in Hockey on KMOX.
What's up with that? What's up with that? What's up with that?
Well, let's say what's up with the officials and the officiating in the playoffs. We talked about this on the fourth period Sunday night, but it's gotten ridiculous. And I thought it was very tame in Game 4. But, Amy, I told you off air, 10 penalties in Game 3 of a playoff. If you look at that stat, that does not look like a playoff game. Like, who calls 10 penalties in a playoff game? There's two sides of it. You either got guys that are just blowing whistles at every single thing, or you got guys that don't know how to handle the energy in a playoff game, and you got fights breaking out and cross checks to the neck like Nazem Kadri.
There have been 24 power plays in this series.
In this series?
24, which is averaging 6 a game.
That's horrible.
That's 12 minutes, and I know that doesn't really work quite that way, but I mean, look at potentially 12 minutes of every game. Yep. It's going to be special teams.
It's it's sucking the life out of the playoffs. And I know it shouldn't dictate how games are being played, but it definitely takes the energy and the momentum away. And it really causes teams to kind of stop and start. But again, you either got guys blowing whistles at the dumbest penalties, like some weak slashing calls that shouldn't be called in the playoffs, or then you have what took place in Toronto and Boston, which you were at, and yeah. You told me it wasn't just that cross check to the neck from Kadri. It was knee to knees that were happening. It was slashings in the back of the legs. I mean, it was nasty.
And we had seats that were at the opposite end of the arena for one hit. So I don't know who it was. I'd have to go back and look. But he gets hit. His helmet goes flying. He's crawling on his hands and knees back to the bench. No penalty. I saw three people in my section get thrown out of the game. So the referees in the stands were absolutely on top of it. But it was chaos. That Bruins Maple Leaf series, and specifically that game, was chaos.
I think they need to find a way to fix the officiating at this point of the season. They got to start getting some guys who know how to dictate play and who know how to make calls that aren't just blowing a whistle to get the attention on yourself. I think that's been the biggest issue so far in the playoffs, at least that I've seen in a lot of the games being played. One more before we kind of preview a game five, Amy. The Las Vegas Golden Knights second line, I mentioned it, Stone, Pacioretty, and Paul Stastny, 28 points in four games. 28 points in four games. Well, I'll tell you how. In game three, Mark Stone had a point in every single goal that was scored. Yep. Last night, Max Pacioretty had a point in every single goal scored.
The top three goal scorers in the postseason are all Vegas Golden Knights.
Unreal watching those guys going. They're going to be just as dangerous as the Blue Jackets and the New York Islanders. All right, game five tomorrow night. It's a 7:30 puck drop, 7 o'clock pregame skate here on KMOX. Amy, what are you looking forward to most in this one in our final 10 seconds?
I'm looking forward to the Blues top line of O'Reilly, Shen, and Tarasenko lighting it up.
Well, and I'm looking forward to the D shutting down that top line of the Winnipeg Jets as well. They know what they need to do to shut down Connor Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. A big thank you to Mike Anderson for all of his help this evening. A big thank you to Darren Dreger and, of course, Joe Vitale. If you missed any of the show, you can check it out at KMOX.com. Amy and I will be back with you on Saturday for Game 6 between the Blues and Jets. Amy, great stuff tonight.
It's a great day to be a Blues fan.
We will talk to you tomorrow night. Blues hockey right here on your home for the best Blues coverage, KMOX.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.